Aren't we living in the best age ever? I mean, look at the world around us. Modern society grants us endless possibilities. We, the children of modernity and neoliberalism, can become anything we want, contrary to our grandparents and their parents, who were told to just pray to God, have kids, work in the factory, and shut up. We can become CEOs of our own startups, hustlers, innovators, YouTube stars, Instagram models, you name it. You only have to work hard and live on rice and beans for 5 years and you'll get there. And yes, of course, this applies to everyone. So get off your lazy ass, start grinding, listen to Gary Vee, and you'll be among the rich and successful in no time. Because hey, you don't want to be a loser, do you? No, of course not. So what are you waiting for? Get your grind set on and start crushing it. Beneath this shiny surface of boundless opportunity, there is, unfortunately, a darker side. South Korean-born German philosopher Byung-Chul Han is concerned that our capitalist society is increasingly leading humanity toward collective burnout and many other problems, such as narcissism and hyperattention. His book, The Burnout Society, explains the effects of today's achievement society and why people are more exhausted and disconnected than ever before. This video explores Byung-Chul Han's warning to the world, the burnout society. If you want to help keep this channel going, become a Patreon supporter. You'll get access to all Einzelgänger videos ad-free. Byung-Chul Han noticed a significant shift in what motivates us, particularly in the context of work, self-improvement, and social interactions. In the past, it was the case that mainly external control, such as punishment and strict rules, dictated people's behavior. But times have changed. Instead of external forces imposing our actions and goals on us, we are now internally motivated. It's not about obedience to some authority anymore, while serving the greater good. It's about taking leadership over our own lives to achieve, self-optimize, and excel. Han's book thoroughly examines our shift from a disciplinary society to an achievement society. He mentions the world described by philosopher Michel Foucault, a place of hospitals, psychiatric facilities, prisons, barracks, and factories, which we replaced with fitness centers, office towers, airports, banks, and shopping malls. At first sight, a rather grim, authoritarian society based on punishment and obedience, characterized by rules and restrictions, has upgraded into this liberated, sparkling society characterized by freedom and opportunity. Western capitalist neoliberalism is where it's at, people. It's the realm of unlimited can, as Han puts it. Here, we can become the best versions of ourselves. Isn't it great to have all this freedom, all these resources and opportunities, all these directions we can take our lives toward? I mean, take our poor ancestors from the industrial age, for example. They could only have dreamt of having the opportunity to climb the corporate ladder, being able to choose between 12 types of SpongeBob toothpaste and travel the world, scavenging tourist trap after tourist trap, gathering Instagram selfies with some vague resemblance of the Taj Mahal in the background to keep up with the Joneses on social media. The insidious thing about the achievement society is that, as members of it, we think we're free, but as Han makes clear, we're not. The achievement society also has its confinements, but they're so hidden and paradoxical that most people don't even realize it. The real matrix is today's society, a celebrated illusion of freedom and boundless opportunity, which, in reality, is one of the most ingenious prisons ever created. And the freedom we fight for, and some are even willing to die for, is illusory. We're not free. One of the most fundamental differences between disciplinary and achievement societies is what Han called the negativity of should versus the positivity of can. In the case of should, there's an external force telling us what to do, laying restrictions upon us, imposing rules. We can see the tyranny of should as a metaphorical or literal slave master, whipping his servants into submission, forcing them to work. Take, for example, a guy named Kim Jong-un, who, just like his predecessors, puts people into prison camps, forcing them into labor, which in turn fuels the country's economy. The slave master approach works to a certain extent. As long as you keep forcing people, punishing and threatening, they will, the majority at least, do what they're told. However, this method also comes with many obstacles. First of all, it takes a lot of staffing and effort to force a significant portion of the population to work and keep everyone in line. And what about human rights? Generally, people don't like to be forced and oppressed, let alone tortured. So there's always a risk of riots and other forms of social unrest. In short, the tyranny of should is quite a hassle. Hahn observed that a can approach is much more effective. I quote, "The positivity of can is much more efficient than a negativity of should. Therefore, the social unconscious switches from should to can. The achievement subject is faster and more productive than the obedience subject." End quote. An essential difference between should and can is that the latter involves an internal motivator. Hahn describes this as carrying a work camp inside. We have become our own masters. Instead of being put into prison camps where a bunch of sadistic guards force us to work, we embody the camp as we push ourselves to work. We're both the guard and the prisoner. Intrinsic motivation is more effective than extrinsic motivation. But we could ask, where does this intrinsic motivation come from? And why do these internal labor camps, so to speak, eventually lead to massive burnout? The idea of freedom to do anything, to be anything you want, rich, famous, successful, sounds enthralling. The world has become our playing field, an extensive realm of endless opportunity where all our dreams come true. We're not too concerned anymore with getting our basic needs met or enduring at the hands of oppression. We're all about self-optimizing, crafting our authentic lifestyles, and becoming the best version of ourselves. Self-improvement and self-development aren't bad per se, but we could also overdo it. The problem with the achievement society is that its members tend to be internally motivated to stretch themselves beyond their means. The constant grinding and leveling up lead to this profound exhaustion called burnout. Hahn speaks of the tyranny of positivity. Let's briefly explore the dichotomy of positivity and negativity Hahn presents in his book. In this case, positivity refers to our actions toward achievement, self-optimization, pursuit of goals, and endless possibilities. The unlimited can. Negativity relates to rules, restrictions, constraints, and boundaries, but also things like boredom, waiting, and reflection. Negativity is what stops us from the pursuit of achievement and self-optimization. The achievement subject is a freak of positivity. We all know these overly motivated people who are always on. They jump out of bed, take their latte enema, appear at work on Monday full of pep, and just go, go, go throughout the whole week, grinding, trying to better themselves and those around them. Always thinking in opportunities, growth, improvement, upgrading performances. We celebrate these people. Companies love them. They're the role models of the achievement society. But they're also exhausting to be around, aren't they? And they generally disdain stuff like breaks, pauses, leisure, and other forms of downtime, unless it's a team building session or a surprise business meeting during a company trip. Why have we evolved into people who just don't know how to stop? We may seem free subjects in the achievement society, but we haven't revoked the should aspect. Should is still there, but in a different form. According to Hahn, the new commandment of the late modern labor society is the imperative to achieve. It's not just that we have the freedom to achieve. Achievement is expected, just as the disciplinary society expects obedience. Not performing in the achievement society is not without consequences, as Hahn stated. Disciplinary society is still governed by no. Its negativity produces madmen and criminals. In contrast, achievement society creates depressives and losers. End quote. It's the pressure to achieve that causes depression, according to Hahn. We constantly apply this pressure to ourselves, leading to self-exploitation and setting often unrealistic high expectations for ourselves, which usually leads to a profound discrepancy between where we believe we should stand and where we actually stand. The latter is always lacking due to the ever-shifting goalposts. The exploiter is simultaneously the exploited. Perpetrator and victim can no longer be distinguished, argues Hahn. The achievement society shows that exploitation without domination is possible and even more potent, as, so it seems, we are our own worst masters. But this auto-exploitation eventually exhausts us, leading to burnout, the precursor to depression. I quote, "Depression, which often culminates in burnout, follows from overexcited, overdriven, excessive self-reference that has assumed destructive traits. The exhausted, depressive achievement subject grinds itself down, so to speak. It is tired, exhausted by itself, and at war with itself, entirely incapable of stepping outward, of standing outside itself, of relying on the other, on the world. It locks its jaws on itself. Paradoxically, this leads the self to hollow and empty out. It wears out in a rat race. It runs against itself." End quote. Hahn calls the achievement subject a modern animal laborant who exploits itself to exhaustion and does so voluntarily without external constraints. He is both predator and prey. The subject's failure to attain the ideal image leads to auto-aggression. Being beaten by a prison guard has been replaced by beating oneself up in the form of bizarre, self-imposed demands, restrictions, self-scolding, and self-inflicted stress. What makes matters worse is the role of digital technology in perpetuating the excess positivity it exposes us to, which also comes as an excess of stimuli, information, and impulses. Our attention has become fragmented. We developed hyper-attention, a scattered form of attention that allows us to superficially focus on many things simultaneously or shortly after another, but not profoundly on one thing, which is required to produce something new and original. All the great works of art, literature, and inventions have been products of someone deeply focusing on something. However, the overstimulated environment of modern-day achievement society doesn't allow its subject to do so, as it demands laborers, grinding repetitive tasks, and doing stuff that only requires superficial attention in exchange for fancy job titles on LinkedIn. We have become a species of multitaskers, and we're proud to be so. These days, when scrolling through vacancies on whatever website, I see many job descriptions containing a list of responsibilities. Being a sparring partner, doing administrative tasks, advising project leaders, being part of the board, visiting clients, communicating with other departments, and of course, your actual task, which is leading a team. All of this in one job. Also, companies often require you to actively participate in a personal development plan, as if just doing your job isn't enough. Sure, the multitasker they seek is functional and useful in terms of productivity, but does this individual actually create something profound, something of substance? In most cases, not really. It reproduces and accelerates what is already available, says Hahn. The multitasker, the hyper-attentive, hyper-flexible being, is suited to run the corporate rat race. He is always too busy, his attention is scattered, he is always on the move, always in a rush, switching between this and that, and has no time for the profound idleness that benefits creativity. Add to this the interruptions by our smartphones, notifications from social media, mailboxes, WhatsApp, Telegram, Snapchat, and we find that the noisy world around us constantly hijacks our attention. According to Hahn, this hyper-attention isn't progress, and we have actually regressed into animalistic behavior. Animals are multitaskers too. In the wild, an animal must eat, watch its young, and keep an eye on its sexual partner, while being vigilant of environmental dangers. The capability of contemplation is a uniquely human skill that we have squandered for the sake of repetitive, superficial self-exploitation and exposure to hyper-stimuli, and we're paying the price for it. Hahn states, Recent social developments and the structural change of wakefulness are bringing human society deeper and deeper into the wilderness. For example, bullying has achieved pandemic dimensions. Concern for the good life, which also includes life as a member of the community, is yielding more and more to the simple concern for survival. According to Han, we have become entrepreneurs of ourselves, highly individualistic, achievement subjects, with egos ready to burst, suffering the ongoing pressure to accomplish. And we're quite narcissistic too, focusing almost entirely on ourselves. We swing between self-absorption and self-obsession. Across the board, friendships and many other connections with the community have lost meaning and lack profundity. Relationships are fleeting and transactional. Serial monogamy has become the norm. In social networks, the function of friends is primarily to heighten narcissism by granting attention as consumers to the ego exhibited as a commodity, states Han. It's all about me, me, me. The achievement subject doesn't contribute to a greater cause. The greater cause is synonymous with the project we call me. An unending pursuit driven by societal expectations, leading to exhaustion, burnout, mental illness, and, in the worst case, self-destruction. Now, is there anything we can do to shield ourselves from the achievement society? Byung-Chul Han's book isn't a self-help book. It doesn't provide a practical step-by-step guide for getting out of the rat race or combating burnout. But it does contain ideas that counterweight our debilitating lifestyles, burdened by excess positivity, which we could describe as incorporating more negativity in our lives. I would say, although overly simplified, let's all just take a freaking break. Not just from work, but also from the hyperstimuli that destroy our attention spans, and the many societal expectations that turn us into self-punishing labor camps. Han speaks of vita contemplativa, the contemplative life, which he regards as resistance to copious amounts of intrusive stimuli. It's an active process of protecting our minds from excess positivity. When someone takes a break these days, it's often something like binge-watching a series on Netflix while checking one's phone with music in the background. This isn't a break. It's more like keeping the neurotic mind occupied because it cannot endure boredom. A proper break is an active process, actively fending off all these stimuli to experience a state of being instead of doing. Contemplation concerns itself with the world as it is, not with achieving, self-optimizing, and the like. But to experience being, we must set boundaries that keep positivity from creeping in. Han also considers things like waiting and boredom forms of negativity. Near the end of the book, Han states, "The capitalist economy absolutizes survival. It is not concerned with a good life. It is sustained by the illusion that more capital produces more life, which means a greater capacity for living." End quote. Han writes that the capitalist economy takes livingness out of life, which is much more complex than mere vitality and health. We've been reduced to our vital functions and capacities, and we seek to maximize these by any means. Hence, the mania around health arose. After life has been stripped of all meaningful narratives and values, health is what remains, according to Han. He calls health the new goddess. And let's face it, these days, we reduce virtue to the size of one's bicep. We reduce meaning to consuming 1.5 grams of protein per kilogram of lean body mass. We don't worship any deity or higher ideal. We worship some woman's butt on TikTok. We worship the body. We devoutly keep it healthy and aesthetically pleasing. But it's an empty way of living, focusing only on a fragment of what it means to be human, and it often manifests as a self-obsessed, egoic activity. Isn't it ironic that people so religiously focus on health, while at the same time their lives amount to nothing profound? Why are we trying so hard to survive in this achievement society when we're too dead to live? Thanks for watching.